One of those is John Marshall, and John is the CEO of QuickTrax, and he's the founder of that group. I've brought him here not as a vendor. He's not paid any fees, and he's not here to advertise. He is one of the most knowledgeable men I've spoken with on the subject of log files, tricks, and analysis, and I thought he would be useful to serve this afternoon to help you with some of your questions that you may have. And he can tell you a little bit more about himself in just a few minutes when we have him talk a bit about his background, and we'll have him here to help us with some of the thornier questions. And John, I'm going to ask you in a bit to give us an update on what's happened with QuickTrax, because there have been some new developments that I find useful and I think our readers would find useful also.
Okay, thank you.
And along with that, we have, 4 or 5 doors down from me is a man that works closely with us and is part of our group also down the hallway. Are you on the phone, Aaron Rosenthal? Aaron? Aaron Rosenthal, can you hear me?
Hear me?
Check up. Is that
can you
okay.
Hear me?
I hear you now. Yes.
Okay. Yes,
Aaron,
I'm here.
Aaron is an analyst with our group. His background originally is in finance and economics. He has, I guess, degrees in both. He is really born crunch numbers, and he's very involved in analysis and metrics and measurement with us, and may be helpful as we get to some of our questions that you may have as a group or some that you have here. Also, we have Jeremy Brookins, who works in our group as a researcher. He's really a core researcher. He spends all of his time poring through data. You'll notice a lot of the logs in the research portion of our site or in the research log itself, the entries are generated by Jeremy. I think that, Jeremy, I mean this in the kindest way, but he truly is an internet geek, and we're proud of him.
Thanks.
So I think actually having him come to work in our offices here on the beach has been very useful, because other than that, what I understood, he would have ordered his food over the internet if possible. And he's really gifted, and we're glad to have him on the team. Brian, are you here also?
Yes, can you hear me?
Alt? Yes. Brian Alt is also here. Brian works, these guys all work full-time with us. Brian was the vice president of List Universe. I think he was the founder of ezinetips.com. Is that correct, Brian?
Yeah.
And he's a publishing expert, and he's very involved in a lot of our research related to content, publishing, and he's an expert, again, when it comes to many of these things. In fact, he's tracking right now somewhere in the neighborhood of, 30,000 emails a day that we're sending out. And these are all opt-in emails sent as part of a follow-up to save abandoned shopping cart orders. As part of one of our research projects right now, we have 10,000 to 11,000 abandoned carts a day that we basically try to save using various techniques from our research, and Brian's spearheading that, among other things. So, and he's very gifted, and so he's here also. And you've met our administrator, who is online and will be assisting us and keeps my life together. And with all of that, incidentally, we have some of our research partners on the line, groups that are companies like maybe some of you who we are in partnership with doing joint research. Jimmy Ellis is here, and Jimmy's probably the most knowledgeable guy I know on comparison search engines, and he's just exceptionally gifted when it comes to driving traffic. I know that he alone, to his site, we worked together on research projects, and I don't know what he did last month, but I know in some months I've seen him drive as much as 20 million page views a month.
You're so thankful.
To their site. That's Jimmy speaking, and he doesn't look like an internet researcher. He looks like a football player, but he's a talented guy. I think Christian Alt is online also. Are you there, Chris? Chris is a brand-new research partner who is working with us. Chris is just an inch away from his Ph.D. in physics, but he's also very successful with eBay and with Yahoo Stores, and he's working with us. So, at any rate, enough of that. Don't mean to bore you with all that information, but I thought I'd give you some ideas to who is here, and we could get right into some of our work. My primary agenda in this telephone call is to assist you with, first of all, some time to question us regarding the last report, regarding metric issues that you may have, and we'll either do our best to answer those, or if the questions are detailed, we'll post more detailed answers in the research logs. But we want to help you with that. And then I want to talk to you about a type of measurement that was not discussed at length in our last report, and yet I think it's extremely critical to your bottom line, and that is usability testing. And I want to look at simple ways that the average company can conduct usability tests that will improve specifically the conversion ratio on their site and therefore their ROI on their overall marketing investment. I think it's one of the most overlooked and yet effective ways for a company to find the low-hanging fruit in terms of revenue within their site process. And so we'll discuss that. Having said that, let me go back up to John Marshall. John, give us a one-minute backgrounder, and then give us a quick update as to what's going on with ClickTracks right now. Once again, we profiled in the last report probably 20 vendors. And John was just one of those, but candidly, we were more impressed with ClickTracks for analyzing the behavior and activity on your website, which is very closely related to the usability testing issue that we'll be discussing. So I thought he would be appropriate to bring on here, and I found his product to be the easiest to use of any of those that we tested when it comes to this type of measurement. It is not John, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's not designed to measure everything that a website might want to measure. But in terms of understanding what's happening when people visit your site, the behavior of your users seems to be very effective.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. McLaughlin. I think your summary of it is very accurate. We built the ClickTracks product because of my own personal frustration with trying to distill user behavior data from existing website analysis products. So because of my past at Netscape and a couple of other companies, I had been analyzing websites and trying to get good data from some existing log file analysis programs, and there are plenty of them, of course, and there's many products that fit into that category. And I became frustrated because I realized that the everything that a user does on the site pretty much is recorded somehow in the log file or in somewhere or other. And if you can just see where people click, you can learn a lot about what they're doing on the site. As the site owner, you may feel that you have this site of content and pages and directory structures and databases, but of course your customers don't see it that way. Your customers see pages and they click, and that's pretty much it. So we decided to build a product that simply shows the clicks, and hence the name of the product, ClickTracks. And I think, Dr. McLaughlin, that your assessment of it is really accurate. ClickTracks is, we built the product deliberately to be very, very good at some things, for example, user behavior analysis, and the product simply doesn't do some other things that traditionally log file analyzer programs have done. For example, it doesn't give you errors on pages and your 404s and that type of traditional information. We just felt that we wanted our product to be very good at some things, and that meant that, well, there's a compromise and it's not so good at other things. But I think that's absolutely right. And your projection that the software is good for usability is absolutely right. It ends up being a very simple to use and effective tool for gathering usability data.
I think that later in the conversation, as I begin to talk about usability testing, I'm going to refer back to ClickTracks, and John, it may be good for you to jump in at that point. Also, during the conversation, if you hear something that you might want to add a note to, feel free to do that as well. In the meantime, I would only say for those of you that are still fuzzy on what John's product does, it tells me information such as which links on my website are getting the most attention, and it does it graphically by presenting my website, my own website, in a browser and highlighting the link with a little percentile beside it. It shows me that link is, you know, being clicked on at this percentage of overall visits. It also tells me information very clearly as to which search terms were used to get to the site, and I can track a user through my site via certain tags that it enables me to create. and it does not take a PhD to use the program.
Can I ask one quick question?
Yes, yes.
This is Roy. Does it work on dynamically sites that generate pages dynamically?
Yes, John? It does.
It does.
So it would work on either an e-commerce site or a search site or whatever.
Yeah, correct. It has a system built in that allows it to adapt to a dynamically generated site. In most cases, the way it works is it takes a first pass and analyzes the way your dynamically generated pages are built. And from that, it makes a set of default decisions about the structure of your pages. So in most cases, not only does it work, but you don't need to configure anything. The software usually works within 10 minutes. Sometimes you may need to adjust some settings, but that's definitely the minority of cases. So most definitely it works on dynamic sites.
Thank you.
All right. That's a good question, and it also works if you have a cluster server formation, which is important for some larger groups that have multiple servers, you know, that they're operating with. So keep that in mind also. Now, I want to say this one more time for anyone that's just jumped on, because I'm feeling slightly uncomfortable. I'm not giving ClickTracks a commercial. I don't get compensated in any way for ClickTracks. I'm here to figure out what works and tell you about it and what doesn't work and tell you about it. And I think that it's been working well for us and it might help you, so I don't mind giving John, favorable comments.
Quick question?
Yes.
Yes.
Ask your name.
This is J.R. Neumiller with a company called RipVan 100.
Okay, J.R., go ahead.
How does this ClickTracks differ from Web Trends?
Very good question. We get asked that question quite a lot. There are two fundamental differences. The first is the presentation of the data. As Dr. McLaughlin described, although in a teleconference it's a little difficult for us to really convey what it does, imagine your web page, so the web page on your site, and next to each hyperlink on your site, ClickTracks is going to tell you how many people click on that link. And it shows you other information surrounding that. So the first key difference is it shows you information in context. This stems from our own belief in the company that showing information is valuable, but if you show the information in context, it becomes much, much more valuable. And it can be very difficult to draw meaningful conclusions from programs like Web Trends or similar tools, because there is no correlation between what people did and the way the site looks. When you see the results in ClickTracks, it's an eye-opening experience. You will just see where people click. And that would be valuable. It's even more valuable because the software then, the second key feature, is it allows you to divide your visitors into different groups and compare how different groups behave. So, for example, you can identify all those visitors coming to your site through pay-per-click and compare those to visitors coming through organic search. And you will then see the navigation path, the click stream of those two groups, and see them side by side and be able to draw conclusions from those comparisons. And in other products such as Web Trends, you can do that. It would take you in Web Trends probably a day or 2 days to get all of the database filters set up and all of the criteria. In ClickTracks, it ends up being a 10 or 20 second job. So I would say those are the two key differences.
There's a difference, certainly, and I think one of the primary differences is the visual arrangement of results, as I think John is describing, which I find context makes it easier. Although, John, JR, we've tested both, and we're right now with our site running both and studying them, and we find some interesting things that Web Trends provides. Let me move on, if I can, and let me suggest that I need to get some feedback from you. Prior to talking about usability issues, I would like to assist you in making the most sense out of the last report that we currently sent to you, which was on metrics. Let me suggest for you that it's different than the report coming up on analysis. Metrics, that report, was designed to tell you how to collect the right numbers. The next report is going to tell you what to do with those numbers to make the right decisions about your marketing. And we've designed, as part of that, a set of spreadsheets that work for publishers or for retailers. And those spreadsheets are very simple. It's, we'll also recommend for you another set of a little bit more complex spreadsheets, but very good, that are done by the Eisenbergs over at ClickZ. And they're, you know, we'll give you some other tools besides what we have here, but we'll show you the spreadsheets that we use ourselves. And we use with our own research and our own research partners to interpret the data that we receive from places like Web Trends and how to use that information. So right now, though, we tried to cut through about 810 pages of our own notes and several, 10 gigabytes of data in this last report, and we boiled it down to 27 pages, which still is a lot. Is there anybody in this audience now that has questions about that report that while we have all these researchers online, we could assist you or try to assist you with information?
Yes, I have a question about IBM SurfAid.
Okay. Can I ask who's calling?
This is Lori Barkman from American Eagle Outfitters.
Okay. Thank you, Lori. Go ahead.
I had seen a summary report that had a grid of different software companies, ASP, as well as software products, and I believe it on the y-axis it was impact, and then so it was low, medium, high, in terms of how each product was ranked, and SurfAid in that chart was ranked low, and then in this report that just came out. IBM SurfAid product was regarded as with a high level of sophistication. So with such disparate ratings, I was wondering what happened.
Okay. May I suggest that I can, just because from doing so much research, it seems to me that the only table that that I have seen that fits the description you just gave me was not prepared for us by us, but was prepared by Eisenberg and over at the name of their site, what is their site? The newsletter is called The Grok, and they're also ClickZ columnists, and they have a site, Future Now, that's it, Future Now, Inc. I have seen a table like that in information they disseminate. It's an Adobe, it's a PDF file. I don't think we had that same table. Now, I may be incorrect because there's a lot of pages on our site, but I do know that that subjective differentiation in the product may be due to changes in and upgrades in the product itself. And what I would like to request that you do, Maury, is email me with the specifics of that or email research@marketingexperiments.com. We will look at your question and track that one down and post it in our research log for you.
Okay, thank you.
That'd be helpful? Okay. And anyone else with questions about their metrics program? I have some questions for you if you don't have any for me, but I'll give you another.
I have a question I'd like to ask.
All right. Yes.
I'm a small primo with Sunglasses International, and I've noticed that I'm especially interested in the Yahoo store under-reporting.
Yes, sir. This is Paul, did you say? I'm sorry?
Yes, Paul.
Okay, go ahead, Paul.
I find it pretty interesting that their figures can be off that much.
Yes, it is. But I have to tell you that we've tracked numbers through 30-plus Yahoo stores, and we've tracked tens of thousands of orders. And the Yahoo and we just had Matthew Ledford. Matthew, are you here by any chance? Okay, Matt. I didn't know that if he'd be in on this call or not, but Matthew just went and flew to Yahoo and met with their people to talk about some of these issues. The reality is, the system they're using was designed by ViaWeb, which was who the company Yahoo bought under Paul Graham, and it's just way outdated. It just doesn't collect metrics accurately. Do you ask a question specifically as to the how or the why of it, Paul, or are you just trying to verify or confirm
that?
What
I'm trying to do is decide whether I should have a separate presence there or not. Excuse me?
You're saying have a Yahoo store? Is that what you're saying?
Correct. In addition to my freestanding server that I've maintained since 1996.
I think Yahoo has about 20 million unique visits a month. to their shopping cart. I think that. I think that it was 16 million the last time I saw, and I'm interpolating from recent numbers that it's 20 million plus. I believe
I would have a difficulty trying to calculate the ROI on that with a discrepancy like that. So,
but let me suggest this, and again, I'm not a Yahoo fan in terms of I don't like their management style, but I think Yahoo is an extremely viable channel, and candidly, I've watched so many Yahoo stores generate so much revenue that I would suggest that, you know, there's a lot of Yahoo merchants out there who are using Yahoo stores and are still tracking ROI, but we don't do it through Yahoo's metric system. We do it through counting individual orders or through other metrics compromises using tools like HyperTracker. And also in about a month, Don Cole, who is the chair of YStore Groups and who's working with us as a research partner and who is also a superb programmer, will have released a product that will help you to actually track the ROI on your pay-per-click campaigns. And I'm chafing at the bit to get it because it's going to save us a lot of crunching time over here. But candidly, read our report on Yahoo stores. If you're on the lab, you can go to the archives. And if you read that, we built 6 Yahoo stores and tested how well they worked over 6 months. And we found that, ClickZ even found that if a store built in Yahoo and a store built in an outside platform side by side with no outside marketing, the Yahoo store got 14 times as much traffic. So I consider Yahoo store as a decent platform for small business, not robust enough when you get over 15,000 products, typically, especially if there's images, but or if you want to make lots of customized changes as your primary platform, but always it seems to me to be a superb marketing channel, thinking of it like eBay or thinking of it like, you know, Commission Junction or thinking of it as a destination where you can meet buyers who are already there.
Thank
that
you.
Was a lot of words. Does that help you, Paul? Yes.
Real quickly, do you recommend having a store in addition on Yahoo or have it simply on Yahoo and nothing on a separate server?
May I ask your name?
Yes, this is JR from Rivim Hunt.
JR, okay. Okay, yeah. I do recommend that depends on a couple of factors. If you're just starting out or you're a small merchant and you're controlling your expense, I see merchants who started. I mean, I can track them. In fact, I could log in right now and look at Yahoo results across the board, and I'd say that many average merchants do 20 to 30,000 a month, but I have merchants and stores that we have built that do well over $1 million a year just in Yahoo. Where you will get frustrated is you reach a stage where you want to have customized processes related to your orders and special programming, and Yahoo is built in an RTML environment, and it's very limited. Plus, you can't use a tool like ClickTrax on Yahoo because you have no control over the servers. You know, you have no access, unless you can place some of that code from their new hosted version on there, but I don't know that you'd be able to do that.
Do many of your vendors have multiple sites, one on Yahoo, one on the outside?
Yes. Yeah, there comes a time when you'll definitely probably have both. It just depends on where you are in terms of your development as far as a company and your revenue and your growth. But I think that for most retailers, Yahoo, most retailers are more than one product, multiple products and common channels. Yahoo should be considered as one of their primary marketing channels. And so that means if they already had one, they'd build a store. But on the other hand, if you start with the Yahoo store, you're going to outgrow it eventually if you keep going. Now, I have been, you know, I'm looking at a group right now. They're number one in their niche. I won't tell you their niche because I wouldn't want to relate their business. But, you know, they do upwards of $350,000 to $400,000 a month in a Yahoo store with all that volume. Yahoo will handle up to 5,000 in terms of throughput orders per hour, typically, without any specialized work on the server.
JR, this is Jimmy Ellis. I'm a research partner of Marketing Experiments, and we're one of those companies that has a host. We host our own website, and we also have a Yahoo store to complement it, and it's done very, very well. I think it's definitely one of the best, most cost-effective ways to add additional revenue to the products that we sell. And the costs, when you really look at it across the span of a year, are very small when you're talking about launching a whole new website, especially being hosted on Yahoo servers and whatnot. And like Dr. McLaughlin said, I mean, if you're able to track the store and its progress through third-party means or your own ways, I definitely think it's worth the time, and it's been great for us. And just talking to other resellers, there are a lot of people that have Yahoo stores, and it's just because of that factor, because they're easy to get up, and when done right, they're, I think you can get a significant amount of traffic depending on what you're selling through the store. There's a ton of traffic that goes through Yahoo. I mean, like I said, it's hard to measure because their system is old, but you know, we have actually a couple of stores, and they do very well. So,
good point, Jimmy. That's a good point. All right, you may be there and wondering about, you know, I want to make the conversation as relevant to all of our members as possible. So if you're there and you have a question regarding any of this or metrics while you've got us, go ahead and let you fire at us again. Any questions at all?
Paul Primo again.
Okay.
The question is as it relates to sell-through percentages.
Yes, sir.
For pay-per-click.
Yes.
Is there any figures? I did read the Deal Time review. I had read some of that, but do you find the Yahoo store, for instance, more effective for sell-through purposes?
As a landing site for your pay-per-click campaigns? Is that what you're asking,
Correct.
Paul?
Correct. Will their format produce a higher than average sell-through, for instance?
By the word sell-through, I'm to assume that you mean kind of a conversion ratio?
That's correct. Exactly.
Okay.
Conversion ratio.
I find that if you don't have a lot of money to spend in the cart, the Yahoo cart, and this is due to Paul Graham prior to Yahoo, is right out of the starting gate a lot easier to operate for most shoppers, and therefore has a naturally higher yield per click. Now, it can be improved upon dramatically depending on who builds the Yahoo store for you, but I would say that you have a pro and a con. The pro is, yes, the Yahoo cart can be a good cart to drive traffic to, but the con is it's very hard to measure pay-per-click revenue within Yahoo. You can do it by going through and counting your orders through your order field and your downloads, but it's a manual process as opposed to having a tracker. You can't put anything in there hardly. I mean, we work with trying to do that, but we find it very difficult. It's time-consuming to get good numbers on your pay-per-click campaign, though it can be done. Any other questions out there?
Yeah, this is Bob Ross with Adventures Marketing and fabulousfin.com.
Okay. Yes, Bob.
I found even with Web Trends that it was really hard to get without a lot of manual crunching, to get good numbers on conversion rates. So right now we're running all our banner ads and, in fact, our click-throughs on search engine, pay-per-click and stuff like that. I'm running special promotions and tracking them with coupon codes. This gives me a very direct conversion rate. Am I missing something, or is there a better way to do that? This is still kind of sort of manual, but it's a separate process from Web Trends and the other metrics we measure. Is there another way to do that,
in our recent metrics report, we talk about some of the simple homespun solutions. Candidly, I find myself relying on those a lot for measuring conversion ratios. And in the last part of that report, if you're in the lab, this would be the previous issue in the sense you would go to the index to get to it. We just put up the abstract issue, so I don't know that you would – it's on the home page now, and I'm going to see if it's been added to the index. It is on the index. So you could go right down to the bottom of the lab and click on index. Incidentally, we're in the midst of a rebuild of the lab, which should be completed within days, and then we'll be building in the new search function. We've waited this long to put a search feature in because most search features we've tested haven't worked. We've been testing one now for several months. We think it is correct. In the new build of the lab, you'll have up at the top of the page there a good search feature that will help you to quickly get to the data you need. In the meantime, slip right down to the bottom, click on index, and the number one thing is web metrics if you need to get to this report. But my point for you would be the last part of that report talks about the tools that we use at MEC. Bob, typically I use one of the things I like to use when I'm just measuring the conversion ratio is a unique landing page, either a redirect or a unique landing page. The redirect through Java or a meta refresh, typically through Java, means that somebody clicks on the link, they hit that page, they're there for 0 seconds, and then referred instantly to the other page. And by giving each of these a unique page in the middle, and it doesn't affect my search ranking with Google because these are just short-term campaigns, I'm able to clearly measure what each campaign sent. Now, there's another way, and a simple way, and that is to use Prolinks, Prolinkz, which is a link tracking program that you can set up in a few minutes. And it lets you assign different links to the links on your website. Like if you have long URLs, you can use Prolinks for short versions. But we use Prolinks not only to shorten our URLs, but each campaign may have a different link that we track within Prolinks. So now we can tell where not only what's happening on the landing page, but we can tell the source coming into the landing page that's clicking and be sure that we're tracking that source. And that allows us to see how overall the sources are performing, the various sources of traffic. And if we're really concerned that we want to isolate one specific source, we use a unique link and a unique landing page, which is just the same landing page copied and then given at the end of the file name, you know, a number, you know, number 8 or letter B, or I like to date it personally. I date it and give it a letter. And then we can test that specific traffic. Because you'll see, I was looking at research this morning. Overall, and this is a site on the Internet right now that's electronics, and, you know, overall their conversion ratio ranges in about the 1 percentile. But specific campaigns often yield 6.5%. Which is 650 times higher. I don't find measuring the overall conversion ratio on my site to be that useful a number. I find that it's so dependent every month on which sources of traffic I'm driving that I find it much more effective to quantify my conversion ratio along with the source of my traffic so that that number is pure and cleaner and can remain more easy for me to compare with next month when I've made a change to my site, or next week, or whatever the factor is. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does. Thank you very much.
Sure. Dr. McLaughlin, would it be okay if I jump in with a suggestion with
yes.
John Marshall?
Yes, John.
One of the features that we added in ClickTrax was specifically this type of conversion analysis, or to understand the behavior of visitors that buy a product. So in our tool, we added a little single icon. You can click this icon. You select the page on your site, which ultimately would be described as being the goal of the site. So for an e-commerce site, that'll be the checkout page or the thank you page or something like that that the visitor sees after they've purchased. From that, once you've identified the page, the software on the fly will work backwards through all the visitor sessions, everybody that's come to the site, and it will determine for you which keywords resulted in the visitor seeing the goal page, which sites they were referred from, and also which links, hyperlinks they clicked on, such that later on in their session they did then purchase. So we found this to be so interesting and valuable, the information, either for marketing purposes or for driving more usability type questions, that we simply added an icon and you can get the results of that question in probably 2 minutes.
Okay.
So I urge you to try it out. It works very well.
John, what is your email address?
I am J Marshall, letter J, Marshall, with two L's, at clicktrax.com. And I'd be more than happy, if people have questions also offline afterwards, more than happy to answer questions. We feel that ClickTrax is a very good product for some things, and it's not ideal for other things. And we're very straightforward about giving advice to people that just want to know if the tool will do a certain, will solve a certain problem or not. So please just send me an email, and you'll hear it straight from us, you know, if we think that we can solve that problem or if you're better off with a different solution.
All right.
One last question I'd like to ask about ClickTrax.
Yes.
Hello?
I've been with the website story, I had to do some custom scripting to get it to work right with the Cold Fusion website we have. Does ClickTrax work well with Cold Fusion with pretty much standard scripts, or how does that work with something like the Cold Fusion Dynamics site?
Yeah, we have. I can tell you that it works perfectly well with most Cold Fusion websites. We did once encounter one Cold Fusion website where it wouldn't work, and that was because the URL structure ended up using a pretty complex parameter parsing mechanism. So as long as your parameters are of the fairly standard, you know, question mark, name equals value, ampersand, name equals value, it'll work. And it pretty much doesn't matter what the names and the values are. I mean, it'll adapt itself to cope with that. And most Cold Fusion sites are built like that. We did once see one that wasn't. So I can't tell you with 100% certainty that it will work successfully, but the chances are very high that it will work. The good news also is if you want to send me an email with your URL, we can tell within 10 seconds just from looking at your site if it's going to work or not, so we can save you some time.
Good. Great, thanks. All right, I'm going to move on because of our time, but I want to suggest this. If you're there right now and you're frustrated because you haven't got a question through to us, or there's information that you're hoping to glean from this call that we're not helping you with right at this moment, I'm going to suggest that you email me personally, email publisher@marketingexperiments.com, and I will look at your questions, and we will try to respond to them either before this call is over or within the research log itself, you know, as time passes here, and we get a chance to look at them and work through them. So with that in mind, let me just look right here at what's coming in. Certainly good. I'm taking that there. And I'm going to go ahead and get started on the usability part of this web conference, and we'll go through that together. And I'll kind of watch for your questions as they come in, and we'll see what we can accomplish in these remaining minutes that we have that will impact your ROI. There are some website problems which are difficult to measure via traditional metrics. There are issues related to the behavior of the people who visit your site that are sometimes difficult to discern simply by looking at a web trends report. And the reality is that without doing something to understand the behavior of users on your site, there's a lot of money being left on the table. I read a survey that was done where 69 websites were accessed by 13,000 users. And according to the survey, 53% had poorly organized search results. I'm talking about erroneous results or items not ranked in order or too many results. 32% had very poor information architecture. And by that I mean that the organization of their product and their content on their websites, the grouping of information, something we call clustering in our research report on homepage design. 27% had extremely cluttered homepages, and 25% had problems with confusing labels. I would venture to say that number, intuitively, I would say that today that number is even higher. It's amazing how many link or information labels on our websites are ambiguous and difficult for someone else to understand and to clearly identify. That type of information is often difficult for you and I to discern just looking at standard metrics reports.
Can you give a quick example of that, Flint?
Sure. We can almost, in a minute I'm going to take you to a live site and we'll look at something. But I'll give you an example. Suppose I'm looking for contact information and I come to your site and all I see is about us. It may be that you're trying to save link space. And candidly, in our site, the way we handle contact information is, and I'm talking about on the main homepage of marketingexperiments.com, we don't break out contact information about us. But there are certain businesses that it's crucial to do that. And thinking that about, and a lot of us, about us has become a label that we all start to understand. We know what it means. Other companies come up with neat little alliterations or tricky or catchy phrases of attitude, and they work only with the fragment of their audience that clearly understand what that is, and they're lost in other people. If we were to take, and by the way, to digress for a moment, we're contemplating that in our next web conference, if we continue this type of service, we're going to actually get all of you on the line together, and I'm going to put a whole team on the phone, and we're going to tear down a home page and analyze it in real time with you participating, if you think that would be helpful. But there are many cases where the actual titles of the information on the left side of your page do not adequately convey what it is, what the stuff is that I get to when I click there. Did that answer your question?
Yes.
Okay. Moving on then, let me suggest that that ClickTracks, and because of the time we spend on it, I can't say much more right now, but ClickTracks, well, when I pull a ClickTracks report up, it can start to help me know what I need to test. I'll give you an example. I'll pull up my home page, and I'll notice that whatever this page is, I say my home page, but it's a home page I'm analyzing, and I'll look at Company X's home page, and I'll notice that ClickTracks has 26% beside one link and 11% beside another and 4.4 beside another, and you got one link over here that is less than 0.1%. And that link is perhaps the link to their Easy newsletter sign up. That tells me instantly, major money loss, instantly, major issue. I could predict that was going to happen now from so much experience by just looking at the iPath of the site and saying that's not clearly in the iPath. Or I can tell by the wording. For instance, nobody wants to register for something. Register is an awful word to use on the Internet in most cases. There are exceptions, particularly register for your free newsletter. Free newsletter means, i.e., cheap information that I'm trying to send at you sometime at some point in order to get your email address so I can really send you ads. That type of wording is not effective in incentivizing a click-through ratio on your e-zine or a sign-up ratio that approaches 5% or better, which is what you should be achieving on the average through a site. And the ClickTracks report might show me that that e-zine newsletter sign-up link is being neglected. But it won't tell me more about than that sometimes. It won't tell me what's going on in the mind of the consumer when they come to the page. And I want to know some things about my home page that I can't discern simply from a report, though I would say a behavioral log file analysis program could help narrow down the possibilities. Which brings me to the next point. One of the simplest, most overlooked ways, I think, for a company to glean useful data is usability testing. But we don't try it because it seems so intimidating. We associate usability testing with expensive panels and laboratories and PhDs and guys like Jacob Nielsen. And, I mean, the Sun Microsystems Usability Lab has a 22-by-24-foot lab with observational control room with 3 analog cameras and scan converters and 2-way radios and 5 output videotapes and composite quad images. And it has another 14-by-18 lab and 11-by-19 lab and a recent, you know, I could go on. List. I mean, they even have a nonlinear video editing with pro system with, and when you see or hear or think about things like that, it's envious. But most of us will not justify that kind of expense, and somehow we've associated that kind of setup and that kind of expertise with usability testing. And candidly, I think it's costing us money, because I find it easier to get useful data from usability testing than I do from my metrics program. It's harder to find, set up, and implement a good metrics program than it is to conduct usability testing. I'm just making a quantitative, subjective statement, but I've seen a lot of companies struggle for 4 or 5 months to get good metrics implemented, and some longer than that. And a usability test can be conducted much simpler than we have been led to believe. And I would like to kind of touch on that. In fact, let me tell you this. You can have your fancy lab. You can have all of your experts, and you can still find yourself overwhelmed. I read a study that was done by Dialogue Design where they took 8 different usability teams, and they gave them one website, and these 8 teams were supposed to analyze usability. the eight teams came up with 300 problems. Try taking that to your dev team. We have 300 problems we need to fix on this site. Not a single problem was reported. Now, here's what's interesting. No single problem was reported by all the teams. Only one team reported as many as 75 problems. And they basically all turned in a different set of initiatives, which leads me to think that, you know, if you just extrapolate that, company XYZ hires a usability team, gets a set of problems and fixes those, could think it's done, hire the next usability team, get a whole new set of problems and have to fix those, and it could go on infinitely. And I don't think that's right. I think that we are forgetting one of the most important maxims about testing, and that is testing is just a means to an end. It is not the end itself. And the only thing that makes people in this business control and use testing effectively is significant, clear financial goals that help define what matters and what does not. Usability testing doesn't have to be so complex if we keep this in mind. The reality is, there's only three or four things that if you do right now on your site will dramatically sometimes increase your overall conversion ratio by 35 to 40%. And an increase in your conversion ratio goes straight to the bottom line. And so I think that, first of all, what I'd like to do in the balance of this call is lay out for you kind of a plan, a five-step way for any company to conduct an internal usability test that provides actionable information. I may be slightly oversimplifying, but then I would rather do that than overcomplicate the process. And candidly, we use this kind of approach all the time to get data that turns in more money within 30 days. So you're ready for that. You may want to have some notes out, and I'll go ahead and begin to move through these five steps with you as rapidly as I can. Before I go further, should I stop for any questions at this point, or do you think we're going to lose momentum? And I'm talking about questions related to this subject, or should I get into these 5 points and take your questions at the end? You can all talk at once. It's okay.
Go for five.
Okay. All right. Let's go through these five steps here. Number one, determine to measure success as opposed to obscure, eclectic, complex processes. Determined to measure success. And here's what I mean. Instead of trying to figure out color patterns and people's response to those, to measure their eye movements on the page, and all types of things that can be useful, it's easier for you to assign to a participant an objective, a task, and then study how successful they are at achieving that task. Here's an example of what I mean. Tell me what the shipping information, tell me what the shipping cost is on a electric grill from such and such. Now I've given my people an objective, and I can measure their success, and I've clearly simplified the process. And when you think of that, probably the next question that comes to mind is the question that would come to my mind, and that is, okay, so which task do I assign? And I think this is where this gets this is where we get practical here. I think you need to determine the top three to five, not more than five, but three most critical tasks that a visitor must undertake when visiting your site. You want to focus on those tasks in which failure costs you the most money, those tasks with the highest revenue potential. You need to find out and ask yourself, as somebody's going into your site, what's the main stuff they're trying to do? And once you've done that, you need to kind of break that into a handful of two or three tasks, like determine the pricing, determine cost, order such and such, and order, say, an accessory to an item on your site, and then measure that. Now, once you determine that that's what you're going to do, once you know your task, I come to the third step, and that is select a small group of test participants Jacob Nielsen suggests that running just 5 people through this process is sufficient to bring light to more than enough problems to solve. But 20 is a good number, depending on how scientific you want to be. I'll guarantee you that by the time the second person's gone through your site, you're going to have learned something. But somewhere between 5 and 20 is a good number. And then make sure these participants, this is all part of 3, are representative of your optimal site visitors. So this third step is to select this small group of test participants. And I would just add as a caveat, make them representative of your optimal site visitors. You can learn something, to be sure, by having someone of your employees go through the site. But you'll learn more by bringing in somebody else, one of your customers, bringing in somebody even who is a potential customer from your demographic that works in the office building next door to you. I mean, we don't have to advertise in the newspaper and you know, prepare for 90 days to do this. Grab 5 people that are reasonably close to your customer profile, get them in front of a computer, assign them a specific task, and then here's the next thing. This is my 4th thing. Assign them a specific task and observe their performance. Now, here's where I will befuddle my colleagues in the research industry or in this field that I'm in. I know that all of this scientific quantifiable data is essential, but I have learned more by standing over somebody's shoulder, or at least, you know, standing over their shoulder can make them nervous, but somehow watching what they're doing. You can do that, A, by standing over their shoulder, B, by having them work on a monitor that you can see through a quad monitor card, or through, you know, recording their keystrokes. But I like to watch them. I like to watch the look in their face. I like to see them hesitate with a mouse, stop, put their hand back on it. I like to see them puzzle over something. You can learn a lot of subjective information. And I want to suggest to you that if you're not a professional researcher, you often feel guilty about that, guilty that you are not getting quantifiable data because that seems to be more important. But remember, that this testing is just a means to an end, and I don't care how you get the data. What you're after is data that will help you be more effective. Now, I'm not saying you can't quantify this process. I'm going to tell you how with my last point here. But I would suggest that you assign them a task, observe their performance, and which brings me to the next thing, and that is measure just 3 elements. Here's what you should measure when they're doing this. Number 1, the time it takes them to accomplish the task you gave them. Now, if it takes them, say, 3.5 minutes to find out shipping information, and you notice that it may be a 3-click path, but it took them 6 clicks to figure it out, then you just got a piece of information that's valuable. If you quantify that with some averages, because you know you notice that a lot of people that you tested struggle with that, and then suddenly, and you know, you add up all of their scores, you get your mean average, and you say it's taking an average of 3.6 minutes to find shipping information, and we think that's too long. You then refer to our laboratory on the order process, and you take that study and you simplify the process, and you go back and you run the test again, and you find out that shipping is now being found in 1.5 minutes, then it doesn't take long for you to figure out that you just about improved or doubled performance in that area, or in another way to say it, you cut in half the time it takes to accomplish this task. This kind of, by the way, shipping information is very important. If you don't know this, many of the reasons you're having an abandoned cart is because people go into the cart just to figure out what shipping costs are, and then they flee after they discover it. I'm going to do a whole report on shipping information and how to use it to improve your return on investment. We'll talk about that later. Shipping information and how you handle it is a function of marketing, believe it or not. It's not just a logistic issue. But let me go on. The time the task requires, the error rate. If they click on the wrong page, if they make a mistake on the way to trying to find out shipping, you need to record that as an error. Notice the number of errors, and if possible, even if it's just subjective, make notes to yourself about the kinds of errors. The number of errors can help you to figure out, again, if there's a problem with your process. And the third thing I like to do, and this is entirely subjective, but ask your user to rate their satisfaction level with these, with your website, with the task they tried to perform, and let them rank it on a scale of 1 to 5 and quantify that with 3 or 4 questions. That's enough information. For most of us, if we were to do that honestly, dispassionately with our site, with an element of our site, with the order process, the data we would glean would be so useful, and we could do it without spending $150,000 on a usability lab running tests for us. So, you know, I can't put this information in the report that you just received, nor will it be in our next report on analytics. But personally, and in this conference call, I would highly suggest that all of us implement some smart usability testing on our websites. The potential return far outweighs the energy cost.
Flint, would you please just review or just quickly list your 5 points one more time?
Yes, I will. Determine to measure success as opposed to obscure, eclectic, complex processes. If you're trying to get it simple, determine to measure success. Let success be your benchmark. Determine the three most critical tasks a visitor must undertake when visiting your site. And you may want to make a side note of this. Focus on those tasks with the highest revenue potential. Number three, select a small group of test participants. And make sure these participants are representative of your optimal site visitors. And number four, assign them a specific task and observe their performance. Number five, measure just three elements: the time a task requires, the error rate, and the user's subjective satisfaction. It's true this approach is relatively crude, but the goal is to glean useful information that helps you improve your site design, and it's not uncommon for usability to double as a result of redesign. Nielsen said that when he changed the useit.com homepage to include a search box instead of a search link, his search engine use increased by 91%. And that's pretty dramatic improvement. All right. We have just a few more moments left. I do have some questions for you, some feedback questions I want to ask in a moment, but do you have questions about this or the information we've covered right now that you'd like to ask?
I just have a question going back a second to the ROI on the pay-per-click stuff.
Yes, sir.
And this is Roy Weissman. Do you recommend, you know, there's those services, Didit and PositionTech and all that. Are any one of those you find to be better than the other for monitoring all this stuff?
You're saying which of these programs would be best?
Yes.
Monitor? Roy, my last article, did you see and read the last article on WebMetrics? Okay if you didn't, but tell me that because that'll tell me, that gives me a starting point.
In March, you're talking about?
No. Well, yeah, it would have been in March.
The one that's on the website?
It went through, it listed all the top vendors, it rated them, and then it listed the top 10 ways we measure here at Marketing Experiments, our own personal measures and metrics.
I guess I missed that because I was looking at different ones, which I looked at the current report on the website. Is that not the current report?
No, it's not. If you go down to the bottom of the page and click on index.
Bottom of the page.
Bottom of the page, at the little links at the bottom, click
index.
On index. And then you'll see WebMetrics Part 1.
Right.
Click on that, and that really will answer your question, I think.
Okay. Thank
and
you.
And I would suggest that for behavioral work, ClickTracks is what we use for this type of analysis that we described earlier. And some other things.
I was just looking at this. This has stuff in here about PositionTech or Didit or whatever.
Yeah, it has everything in there. I don't know if it has Didit or not. I know Kevin at Didit. He's got a good product. For pay-per-click work, though, there's nothing I've found that does a good job of measuring ROI. We use HyperTracker, and we don't like it. But we're working on a solution better than that, and I'm trying to get John over there to build exactly what we need. We need ROI measurement. I want to know, and if you're on this call, what I want to know, and I do measure this, but it's hard to get it right now. When you click on the search term in Google AdWords and it takes you to my page and you buy a product, I want my metrics tool to tell me that you came through Google, that you clicked on this keyword, and that you spent this much money. So I can, at the end of the month, say I spent $4,000 on Google, but I made $23,000 in gross sales, and with my margin at X number, the Google campaign was worth spending money again. It's amazing to me how many people don't really know the answer to that question. Any other questions?
I have a question. This is Justin Magnan from Ottawa, Ontario.
Okay, Justin.
Will you be doing any experiments on different product categories and how they? And I know that you do use a variety of product categories in your tests, but it's unclear a lot of the time, well, to me anyway, what products are more successful using the tools that you're conducting the experiments with. I mean, you can have an optimized site, you can have all the things that you've been talking about, you'll test it thoroughly and have a wonderful checkout process, and you might be selling the completely wrong product.
Aaron, are you on the line? Aaron Rosenthal?
Yes, I'm on the line. My phone's kind of breaking in and out, so I don't know. I missed part of the question.
Well, he's asking about categories, and one of the things that we've noticed this month, for instance, is that deal time, for instance, is very erratic in how well it's performing. Your category has a lot to do with which engine works best, and that
sure.
goes also to Google and Overture. Do you want to comment on that, Aaron?
Yeah, well, we found that that some of the smaller search engines are very category-specific. Certain partners that we have that we've been advertising, small electronics products, we've seen them do better on search engines like DealTime or NextTag, or which are actually like a bid for placement rather than a traditional search engine, a bid for product placement. But other things like other search engines like AHA, we've been testing, and Frugal, we've been running tests with, and all of which we've seen very sporadic. Certain partners, certain niches will do well on one, certain will do well on others. And I guess the moral behind that story is testing it goes a long way, and it's really there is no science as far as the smaller search engines go. I don't know if you can hear me or not. My phone's kind of breaking up on this end. Okay, good. As far as it goes for individual sites, we found that it's very category specific, and the only way that we know right now to determine which search engines are going to be right for which campaigns is to test. I don't know if that was the question verbatim that you were asking.
We can help you identify some categories, and specific if you ask us, you might want to tell the director. People need to post some of these questions in our research log, and we can respond to them also like that. But I would suggest that I'm getting ready to post, for instance, the top 100 searches within Yahoo Store, which will tell you what Yahoo shoppers are looking for the most. I'll tell you that the number one search, for instance, last week in Yahoo was on pool, was for pool, P-O-O-L. I assume that it was swimming pool. Gucci was number 3, digital cameras was number 5, prom dresses was number 4. Do you feel the seasonal influence on that?
How about inkjet cards?
I can tell you fairly much. I'm looking at the top 100 right now from within Yahoo itself. I don't see them high on there currently, and they may be on the list, but they're not jumping out off me at the current moment. Even swimwear comes in pretty high right now, again, because of the time of year. That list changes dramatically based on the season, but that tells you a lot. It tells you a lot about what shoppers are looking for at a given particular time across the market. And that's the kind of information you can get through participation in the Yahoo Store, incidentally. Let me ask you guys some questions, okay? And I need to hear feedback on this because it's very critical. We're beta testing this. We've spent a lot of money in testing over the last several months what we're doing with you together right now. And I guess my point is, is this helpful as a regular feature for members at marketingexperiments.com? Can you give me some feedback? Do you find this conference together, for instance, next month, if we tore a website down together and looked through the home pages and worked on it, things like that and things we're talking about now, is this useful to you?
Absolutely.
Yes.
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 Yes. Excellent. This is Jimmy Ellis again.
Depends on what it costs.
That's got to be Roy, because Roy, that would be a Roy thing. I honestly think that we may have, and I'm going to ask you guys this, okay? I'm going to ask you a pretty direct question. We think that we're not going to charge members for the conference itself, which is costly, but we're prepared to do it, and we think it'll probably be cost effective in the long haul. But my point would be, if we don't charge members, but we have them at least pay for their cost of their call, not for the cost of the conference. Do you think that's reasonable?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Most.
We're used
hello,
to doing that.
Clint.
Okay.
Yeah, many sites do that. They don't charge for the conference, but you pay for the call.
Well, it's so great, see, to get that kind of feedback from you, because
even Roy said that.
Even Roy.
if you have a halfway smart crowd, they can figure out how to do it cheap, right? They can buy the time cheap.
Yeah, which one of my members right now, anybody here that sells long distance service, this is your big moment.
I've got a feature.
Are you guys, here's another question for you. Research logs, are you guys using the research logs? We sent you the abstract issue for a few days ago. Are those of any value to you? They're kind of ongoing. Here's what we're discovering today. Notes that we're taking live and putting them in there. They're not the main articles, but do they have value?
I didn't look at it.
I haven't discovered it yet.
Haven't really been there either.
Okay.
I've read every research report on your website, but I haven't found the logs yet.
When you go in, the tab at the top of the page says research logs. There's three tabs, research log, publisher log, retailer's log.
You need to do a usability test.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tab is staring us in the face,
right,
but nobody's really looked at it.
Well, I didn't go there.
What about the abstract issue? We sent you an issue 3 days ago with abstracts from the research logs with links into it. Did anybody read that?
No.
Did you get it?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. All right, then let me ask you this. How many of you don't read the reports right away because they're long, and you save them for a time when you can, and sometimes that time stretches out longer and longer?
Yes.
Yeah.
Let me tell you what we're experimenting. Go ahead.
I try to skim it as soon as I get it and mark it whether I need to dig into it further or not.
Let me tell you what we're experimenting with right now, and it's very, this is our most expensive risk test for with our members right now that we're performing. But this month, everybody who came in at the $24—see, we've been testing price points. You know, they started all the way out at $7.95, and it's at $34.95 a month now. If you haven't been on there on the front side of the site, it's $34.95 now. And incidentally, for those of you in the business, our conversion ratio so far has doubled at $34.95 over what it was at $24.95. Point of interest. That doesn't mean your price has gone up, but I mean the price, the new price. And my point for you is that anybody who came in at the $24.95 a month level or higher, we are sending out printed versions of the journal this month in a beta test, pre-hole punch, so that you could place them in a notebook. Is that something that you think is useful to members?
Yes. No more paper.
For those of us who travel a lot, it's ideal.
Okay.
We can take it with us.
Yeah. I print them all anyway.
Pardon me?
I print them all anyway.
Would it be convenient? Is it easier? I mean, you know, it's going to cost us apart from a lot of the logistics side, somewhere, you know, between, I think this month it costs us $6 an issue when we send them out that way, which is a lot of money when you calculate your other costs. We'll get that number down. I'm just being very direct about costs with you.
Well, can I make a suggestion? Can you put it as a PDF file?
It is.
It's on the site as a PDF file?
No. There's a printable version on everything.
Okay, yeah, it says print-friendly version to support. Okay.
Don't waste the money.
Well, you know, for me, I print a lot of stuff that I want to read at a later time so I don't forget to read it, and I carry it around with me in my briefcase and read it over coffee or something. Receiving a printed version in the mail doesn't really change that for me.
So are you saying that you think it could be good, or is that what's the consensus that it would be good, or that?
I was going to say, I don't think you need to. I mean, in my opinion, people can print the PDF file.
Sure, people can print their own.
I mean, I think there's probably other things you could do. Take that money. I don't have an answer to the second, but there's probably other ways you could use that money to give members better benefits.
We're afraid.
So you might want to think about putting all of your existing reports on your on a CD and send that out.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
That's much more valuable for me than receiving a printed version, because I can print them as I need them, even though the cost is slightly higher to me. I don't need to print them all that often.
But why not a CD that's searchable?
Right.
So if I'm looking for keywords or something, I can go on that CD and send it out quarterly or whatever.
What we wondered, and this is what I'm asking, what we wondered is if people have paid for this and they... it's coming in and they're busy and they miss it and they don't get it except that one email that comes to them to drive them back to the site. When they get it, a printed version, they can pop it in a notebook and it would reinforce the value they're paying every month and increase our retention ratio. But you think, you know, for a lot of people who can't get to it right then, but I'm hearing is this consensus that, who thinks that, who disagrees with the guys that say, just to see, get an idea quantitatively here. Who disagrees with it? Who thinks it would be good if we sent a printed version? Anybody?
Yes.
How long is the report, Clint? How many pages?
The one we sent is 27 pages.
Yeah.
But they average
too long. I would say like a 4 or 5 page summary or something like that is big enough, like a newsletter kind of thing.
No, summary's no good. You need to have the whole thing.
I don't think it's going to affect your retention at all, Clint.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
I agree, though, that some people are not going to the site, because I'd find myself doing that too. I miss it for 2 or 3 months, then I jump back in and then I find out how valuable it is. You're right that they're missing some of that, and I don't know how to solve that problem except for maybe an HTML news email to us that maybe gives us some help.
What if we offered a notebook that had all of those, I mean, with a printed notebook that had the last 6 months or the last 12 months worth of issues all in one format that you could order and would be sent to you and would, in other words, you basically would, suppose you just came in this month, you could actually order the last 6 months or the last 12 months in a master notebook, pre-printed and ready. Is that valuable at all?
I think that has value. Obviously, if someone just signed up now, but if you signed up now, you can go into the website and see
the
historical information.
Website, yeah. Yeah.
Or you can choose to pay extra and get the notebook.
Flint, this is Bob Ross again. You know, I think if you want customer retention or to remind people that you have this available, what I would do is instead of sending it as a report that we might read later, I would do a really nice HTML presentation about the quality of this report and have it maybe even downloadable with a link. So instead of having the report right there, just do a real nice presentation on the benefits of this report and then let me link to it and download it on the spot, put it on my desktop, print it out if I want to, read it at leisure. And instead of having you don't email the whole report, you email a promotion on the report that really hits the key points of the report and really gets people to want it. Then they have to go to the website, sign in and download it, and you could have a special landing page for that, and you create a real interest in that report. So focus on creating the interest on the report rather than delivering the report.
Agree with that or disagree?
Yes,
agree. I agree.
That would work on me for sure, and I don't want to see more paper, but if you reminded me that there was value in there and I just need to go fetch it, I would go.
Yep.
I also think some kind of database approach could be valuable, where if you put it on a CD or either that or you set it up online where you can search a database for keywords and things.
Yeah, we'll be releasing that in about, I don't want to say 3 days, but it's supposed to be ready in 3 days, within a week.
Because that's when you're doing a project and say, what happened to this or whatever? And you can just
You'll
go look it up.
Yeah. Okay.
Think of the report as a product and create an interest in that product, and people come back to the website to read it.
Okay. Well, listen, I don't want to hold you up, but I deeply value this kind of feedback, and we're going to take all of that to heart. And And would you guys agree that this next, if we were to go in and examine a home page in this next issue, together and or a landing page and tear it down from a standpoint of the optimizing it for the highest conversion ratio? Would that be a useful way to approach the next conference?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Sure. I think it's a good idea. But you should
how are you going to pick
like
this website?
You should have like three pages, Flint, so that we can that have different types of approaches. Because one page that's radically different than the kind of pages I work with won't help me much.
Okay.
So if you have like, you know, a kind of retail-based page for like a single product, maybe a portal-type page for a site that's trying to be more portal-like, and then another type of page based on the three most important types of websites out there, then we'll get a view of that might be more, we might be able to relate to our specific needs more.
Okay. All right. Well, I find all of this useful. And listen, guys, we value you, and we really do.
And he means ladies, too. You guys, the southern draw type of term for men and women.
Thanks for tuning
in. Keep that in mind, ladies.
This is my administrator over here talking. He keeps me straight. Also, I think we're going to post the notes from this phone call in the research log. So if you missed those steps, we'll place them in there for you. And along with that, we're going to also make a recording available for this phone call that you can download and review if you need to do so.
Very good.
Super.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We appreciate you.
Thank you.
All right.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.